Hello, everyone, and welcome to Actually Comics for February 6th, 2019. I am Tristan.
I am Bob.
And we are here to talk about comic books aplenty.
Yes.
Comics aplenty. It's a fairly small week, but there's a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
Really, I'm stoked about a couple of things, especially. And so
let's get at it. Are you actually stoked?
I'm actually stoked about it.
Let's take these ones off the top.
I just hadn't
read them. I haven't read this one either.
I'm just going to talk about the first thing I want to talk about. I just want to talk about X-Men.
Ooh,
God damn it. Uncanny X-Men was great this week. It's huge. It's a $7.99 issue, but it's really, really, really good. It's absolutely, like, it's right in there for me. It's a Cyclops Wolverine story, which I love. It's just, there's so much about this that just reminds me of the stuff that I was super into when I was reading the X-Men regularly. Great book.
Yeah.
Really cool. It's three different stories that are all basically the same story from different perspectives.
Rashomon.
Yes.
Rashomon style.
It is. It's exactly like Rashomon. but it's okay. It's not Rashomon, but it's fun. No,
it's not, but it is good. And it's so, yeah, it is good. I liked it. I didn't, it's a beefy issue and it has art
it
by
is.
John McCrae in it.
Yeah, does.
And I thought that was cool to see. And, so each obviously story has different,
It's got the right amount of drama for me. Where it's like there's some real stakes and there's some real stuff going on, but it doesn't feel like that X-Men stuff where you're just like, oh God, just shut up. I don't want to hear about your nonsense relationships anymore.
Yeah. So it's cool to me also because you had this week as well, Marvelous X-Men.
Which I also very much liked.
I thought it was cool. I'm less into the Age of X-Men thing. But it was cool. I like the main book. But it's cool how the main book is going on while this crossover thing is going on. And it's like, here's what's happening while the X-Men are off being.
Right. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy about. I think this issue made me like the Age of X-Men more, knowing that they're basically existing in different realities at the same time.
Yeah.
And that there's a small team of X-Men left in the real world that aren't in this weird utopian society, and they have to go fix everything.
Yeah.
I think that's super cool.
And this X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, is written because now there's like three writers on the series, and this one is written by Matthew Rosenberg, who wrote the Madrox series, and Madrox is one of the few that has not left this plane of reality to join the Age of X-Man.
It's great because the little team that's left is like, would probably my favorite team. That would be like,
but if you're going to restart the X-Men from a core of like X-Men characters that, and especially like super important ones that haven't been around a lot. it was cool to see like a Cyclops Wolverine kind of core.
Yeah.
And then, it was also cool to see the Morlocks or like a couple of them.
Yeah.
And just the kind of setting the stage for the grander X-Men world as it exists now.
I'm into it.
Cool.
I'm super into it.
Yeah. That's good. Marvelous X-Men, good too.
Marvelous X-Men, all of it. It's great. Sandman Universe, The Dreaming, number 6 is out.
I did not read this.
Well, it's still crazy, spooky, weird stuff going on in The Dreaming.
My review is it looks good from a distance.
I didn't read Deathstroke, did you?
I did.
I actually really loved it. I loved the last one.
It was super good. Christopher Priest killing it as
usual.
This is the final Deathstroke in Arkham. So it's basically Deathstroke, kind of Deathstroke versus Hugo Strange. There's a lot of characters in it. Not just Deathstroke and his supporting cast of kids and others, but like a ton of Batman villains. And obviously it's Arkham. I thought it was great. It was a great, like, honestly, like, even if you hadn't read most of the, like, if you missed a couple issues of it, it ties it up really well in a way that you don't feel like you missed a bunch of stuff. I dug it. Deathstroke. And there's a sweet Dave Johnson variant cover.
Yes.
Super trippy.
Oh, it's so good.
It was really good. So Tristan is flipping through Young Justice 2.
I am flipping through Young Justice, which I actually read, and I'm still flipping through it.
I loved Young Justice 2. I really like Young Justice. I particularly like this kind of like Wonder Girl as Buffy kind of thing. Like, there's definitely like a... she's just way cooler than I remember her ever being as a character, and maybe that's just, you know, hindsight or whatever, but like
or just that nobody's ever really written her this well.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. I really like this take on Young Justice. I think it's really good. You're kind of just seeing the team. They're in Gemworld and they're kind of coming together, and you're getting a little bit more of the personalities and the overall threat, and still maybe a little slow pace, but you know, plenty of action, and I thought it was really good.
Okay.
Did you read that?
I did.
Yeah,
I loved it. I have a question for this.
Oh, sure.
I thought this was a one-shot.
It is.
Really? So that didn't feel tied up at the end.
Oh, it
to
totally
me.
Did, dude.
Really?
Yeah, it was depressing as hell. So what we are talking about is another one of these Marvel 80th anniversary issues. It's called Gunhawks, and it's written by David and Maria Lapham, Stray Bullets, and other series. But it's, I can't remember the name of the artist. But it's not an established Marvel character. It's like a horror Western story set in the Pancho Villa Revolution, Mexico, Texas border kind of conflict. And there's a guy who didn't do some cool stuff and is being hunted by some avenging demonesses. And I won't give away too much more of the story, but nice, sweet, done in one. You know,
that's too bad. I was really like, I was holding out hope that this was one of the ones that was going to keep going, because
it's really cool.
I was like really stoked about this book. Yeah. I assume because it's Gunhawks, because it's one of those books that was an Atlas carryover from the early 60s. I mean, late 50s, okay. Whatever. It's another one of those like celebrating Marvel's history kind of books. Like the sci-fi and the horror ones that they did, the Crypt of Horror and blah, 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 Crypt of Terror, whatever.
It definitely is more, to me, almost more of a horror book than a Western. It's a horror story set in a Western. It's called The Ballad of Dead Man Donnelly. And,
yeah,
it had a
real bummer of an ending that I was kind of hoping would not be the ending.
Yeah, it was definitely like kind of, I mean, tied it up, but like tied it up in a way that, you know, not everybody was happy.
Yeah. And speaking of endings.
Ooh, yeah.
Here's an ending. Immortal Hulk 13. I mean, this is not the be-all end-all of this story arc, but this is a real wrap-up to the hell.
Yeah, it's the hell end arc. Of the in-hell. The
and
in-hell,
it's interesting.
Yeah, the in-hell has been not as... I haven't loved it as much as the earlier issues of this, but there were some really cool...
I'm glad they're out.
Yeah, I'm glad they're out of hell. I'm glad there was a really cool, if you're a fan of, like, the Peter David run of, like, the multiple personalities of Hulk and, like, that kind of stuff, there's a really cool moment towards the end. Kind of sweet, actually.
Yeah, yeah, really was.
But I just, overall, it's great.
I
dug it.
It's, in fact, the ending of this is so much like, it's, this book is so good that this issue, the way that it kind of wraps up, it almost feels like a resolution for the whole character, period.
Yeah.
That has never happened.
Hmm.
It's like, it seems like there's a moment that's so significant that it's just like, it's important for the character, period, forever, since the 60s.
Yeah. Well, there was the Peter David stuff. Really did that, and then when they kind of went back to like the Raging Hulk after the Peter David run had kind of been finished, there was a point where it's like, okay, like this is the first time they've kind of gone back to that well of like what he was doing with the character, and I mean in a very different way.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't want to say it's been done before.
I know what you're talking about.
It's like a riff on something that's been done before, but it's
but
also
the actual literal, like last three pages of this book is what I'm talking about.
And I think worth noting for this run is, Joe Bennett, the artist is really good. Really good. And I'm really happy to see him on a, like just a flagship popular book. He's been around for a really long time, and it's good to see someone like that just kind of killing it.
You want to talk?
That's good. I would love to talk it.
You want to talk about beautiful art and crazy monster stuff?
Yes.
Let's talk about Green Lantern number 4.
Let's talk
Holy
about
crap!
2000 AD presents Green Lantern number 4. It is so British, and I love it so much. It's also starting, like, one of the villains of this is kind of like a Seven Soldiers villain. So kind of an overall tie-in. I think that's
the space vampire.
Yeah, I think she's, I mean, maybe not. Maybe it's just a really similar character design, but
okay. She looks like Black Orchid,
but who she looks like.
Yeah. But. Well, there's a, yeah, she doesn't look like that inside. It's just kind of like the red coloring on the thing.
I thought that last page she did too.
Yeah, maybe. Well, she's got that costume because
there she looks like Spawn.
Oh, yeah. So basically, now we can kind of talk about the thing that we talked about in the last issue of Green Lantern that we didn't want to spoil, was that at the end of the last issue of Green Lantern, how Jordan, like, literally executes a guy. And so there's fallout from that, which was nice to see. It was, like, when it first started out, I was just, like, so, like, nothing happens to him for just, like, executing this guy. Like, not cool. but you kind of see what the fallout is. And there's also just those these weird other Green Lanterns. There's one at the end that I love the design of. There's a new planet Green Lantern. And there's this guy called Ash Pack Glyph that I'm really, he looks like a flattened Earth pancake, like if the thing was like smushed and got a Green Lantern. I don't know, it's just really fun, very sci-fi take on Green Lantern, but like nothing to do with this like indigo blah blah blah, just like Green Lantern, it's a thing. And then there's the controllers are kind of like in it as like the opposite, and just really continuing to be awesome. I would expect if I ever don't like a Grant Morrison comic, that would be like a huge shock. I really dig his stuff and how he approaches comics, and I love that like there's clearly no editorializing of like what it's not like no one's saying like you can't do this, and that's what DC needs. I feel like the same thing with Young Justice and
sometimes
the Superman
that's dangerous
books.
With Grant Morrison,
I mean, but it could be for sure, but like in this instance, it's helping.
Yeah.
It's a big help. I like it. It's fun. And the Liam Sharp art is sharp, dude.
It's sharp. It's wicked, wicked,
wicked
sharp.
Well, Conan number 3 is out.
Conan number 3.
Conan.
I don't know what to say about it. I feel like if you like Conan, you kind of know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. If you're like Conan, you're going to
be shocked to find out that Conan gets into a scrape, gets put in prison, stabs a guy, some other stuff happens, has sex with a lady, gets wasted, stabs a bunch of other guys, and it's great.
And then gets on a horse.
And then
and
gets on a horse
away.
And rides. And there's a splash of him looking fucking majestic.
Yep.
Shocker.
For sure.
But it's great.
There might be a sunset involved, some majestic sky hues. It's great though.
I love this run. It's, you know, it's the exact team they needed to put on this, so it's a perfect Conan comic.
Yep, I like it. It's slick for a Conan book too. You with the Barry or not? I guess with Barry Windsor Smith. But
that's
like
actually kind of what
really,
it reminds me of. It reminds me of Barry Windsor Smith.
I feel like it has like a softer edge than that, or like the John Buscema Conan stuff, and I kind of like that about it.
Yeah,
like a smoother, like it bolder
does.
Line.
And also sometimes Conan has like straight up like goofy mugs, which I love. Like there's a couple of times when Conan's just like,
yeah,
and it's like. Yeah. It's nice to see a little bit of like a little bit of soft edge weirdness in a Conan comic too.
Sure. I dug it.
Like it adds. I feel like it adds to it. I feel like that Gru comic was like one of my favorite Conan comics.
Oh,
Conan
the
meets
series.
Gru.
Oh, I never knew there was a Conan meets Gru. That's cool.
Hilarious.
That must have been fun. I'm gonna briefly talk about, which I know probably Tristan hasn't read, BPRD, The Devil You Know, number 13.
I haven't.
We are heading towards the end of Hellboy as we have known it since the early 1990s.
So sad.
It's not though. It's totally exactly what should be happening.
It is.
And the battle. This is. Like if you're following it, you're like, holy crap, I can't believe this stuff is going down.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, no, I know.
Like, just who is on stage and who is about to tussle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
shit.
Dude, it's crazy.
God damn it.
So basically,
I thought I knew what was going on.
I will actually, I think that talking about what's going on in BPRD in vague terms is actually kind of doing it a disservice, because if you're not listening to, if you're not reading it, you don't know that, like, literally Hellboy is back from being dead. Abe Sapien is, like, crazy powered up. Liz Sherman is crazy powered up. And the three of them are together and they are fighting the return of the Ogdru Jihad and the Ogdru Hem, or the Ogdru Hem. If I got it right. I'm sorry if I didn't get it right. But either way, there's crazy monsters on Earth. Earth is turning to hell. There's a guy from the BPRD that's got this kind of, like, if Hellboy was human kind of vibe, that has this crazy magic sword. Yeah. There's a psychic that's running around. Phoenix is a psychic. Her dog.
He's Mage.
Yeah, kind of. Like, he's got a Kevin, like, Matchstick Mage kind of thing. There's a kind of a really cool overall cast of characters. But what you are setting up in this issue is basically Hellboy, Liz, and Abe versus the return of Rasputin. Except Rasputin is now a fucking giant.
Yes, it's like when I saw Rasputin in this one, and I was like, "Oh, I didn't know that. I thought he was the ape with the Nazi head skull."
Oh yeah, those guys were around recently.
Really,
all the crazy old Hellboy elements are back. The art is by Lawrence Campbell, but it's written by Mignola and Scott Alley together. I do miss John Arcudi's take on things, but at the same time, like. They're wrapping it up,
and also Rumble is awesome.
Rumble is awesome, yeah, and he's doing that Crimson Lotus, and so it's like he's still around the Hellboy universe. But no, BPRD is great, and if you want to know how the Hellboy story is going to end, you're gonna want to read the next few issues.
Oh hell yeah!
I think there's probably like three left,
and
one of them's gonna be enormous.
Oh my god!
Because you know the last one will be like, there's all these ads for Hellboy Day, so I don't know if it's ending then, but like this is cool, and
yeah.
I for the last bunch of months it's been real cool. I've been jazzed on it again after it went to a place where it was like the story was kind of moving forward, but it was moving forward very slowly. And so now it's like a faster pace, but it's also just like, here's all these things that you are being warned about in the early Hellboy stories. And now they're like literally just like fighting them.
Yeah.
It's like, so cool. There's like just like giant slugs. Like there's like 360 something giant slugs that have come from space to land upon and terraform the Earth for the new race to come, which are also on the Earth and have also brought back Rasputin. It's crazy.
Yep.
It's just really cool.
Yeah.
Dig it. Love it.
Love it.
You picked up and put down Batman.
I did.
Number 64.
Yeah. I actually really liked Batman.
I liked it. I'm really sorry to say, because I do really like Tom King, but Tom King didn't write this, and it's the first Batman issue I've enjoyed in a while. It's a team up with Flash. It spins out of recent Batman events and Heroes in Crisis, but it's just...
And also, like, the beginning of that last Batman run, like, there's a big thing that comes out
of
that.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
That, like, comes back that you never... I thought was going to be there and done forever, and this is actually... It's almost a payoff to something that I thought was terrible when it happened. And now I'm like, oh, I'm actually interested in these characters that I was like, just let them go away, please.
Yeah, pretty much. But we'll see what ends up happening with it. It's called The Price of Justice. And it is part one. It is written by Williamson. And it is drawn by March.
Also, there's an awesome Batmobile in it that's like a throwback to the 66 Batmobile. That
oh,
has
really?
Like the, yeah, it's got like the bubble. It's got like cool. Red bubble windows on it. It's beautiful.
Nice. Yeah, the Justice League is also in this, but I guess you might expect that from. And also, I do really enjoy that, like, when the Flash rescues people, he takes time from talking to Batman to give them pizza. And there's like kind of, I don't know, it's just that melancholy stuff that DC is really doing a lot with in Heroes of Crisis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here, let's talk about this.
Yeah, let's talk about how freaking brutal this comic is. Fury's number one.
This was not what I was expecting.
No.
I was honestly expecting like a continuation of Mr. Miracle. I was thinking this was
no.
going to be like a Vertigo type, like
no.
fun, crazy, weird And this was not.
No, this is like the sexual politics of the fourth world, and it is horrible.
Yes.
Darkseid and every male character on Apocalypse is just, you want them dead.
Yes.
By like page five of this. It's the most humanizing take on granny goodness that I could imagine.
Insane.
And just, so it's an all-female creative team, as far as I know, at least the writer, writing and artist. You have Cecil Castellucci, who wrote one of the Gerard Way Young Animal books, The Shade book.
Oh, okay.
And then Adriana Mello illustrating, and then I guess it's just the female creative team. But it's Female Furies, if you know them. It's from Jack Kirby's Fourth World. It's Big Barda and the Whip Lady and the Crazy Joker Lady and the Desaad Lady and the one named Stompa who stomps on things.
Stompa is my favorite.
Yeah, Stompa is.
I mean,
good.
It really pretty much. I like that it describes what you do.
Yeah, for sure. I would like a team up book of like Stompa, Flippadippa, and who's the other one? Who's the other one? Forager, maybe.
Oh. Yeah, the bug.
The bug.
Yeah, those guys. Put them together in a book. Flippa-Dippa needs to come back, though. I love
Flippa-Dippa.
That guy. Flippa-Dippa. he's the best, man. Anyway. He wears a wetsuit on land.
It's true.
like, to every battle, he's just like, I got my flippers on. I'm Flippa-Dippa.
What's the name of the guy from the Forever People with the big lion's mane, the big furry head?
Big Bear.
Big Bear, yeah.
Yeah, there's Big Bear, Beautiful Dreamer.
Yeah. Oh, Beautiful Dreamer is another one I really
Seraphan,
like.
The cowboy. I don't know if I could name all of them, though. I think that's it. Mark Moonrider.
Ooh.
He sounds like a Voivod album.
He does sound like a... It sounds like a Lord Weird Slowfeg album. but you know what else is out this week?
Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. And guess what?
What?
Stuff happens.
Yeah. Not much.
Nope.
There's some zombies. There's a horde of zombies. It's weird how in that book, I hadn't read it in a few issues. Apparently, like, a major character has died recently, which surprised me. Not really. But how, like, kind of mundane herding zombies has become for the cast of The Walking Dead. I was just kind of like, yeah, we haven't done that in a while. They're like, just like, you have to dip. There's like 400 Walking Deads, and we're just going to make them go over here because that's what happens in our world now. I don't know. I imagine they're just calm before the storm, and there's going to be some kind of crazy chaos coming up.
I'm assuming werewolves.
This? Did you read this?
So, okay.
I hated the dialogue in this.
So here's the book we're talking about. Vindication from Top Cow and Image. This is a...
interesting story of a guy who goes to jail for a crime that he may or may not have committed.
Yeah.
And a detective who is desperate to get him sent back to prison after he is released early.
He's clearly trying to pin this murder on him. This was one that felt like it was built the wrong way.
I don't know. Something about just the dialogue. I hated it. It was so like
dialogue was rough.
Insidery, but like not like they just like the way they talked was like so like I've been to prison and this is how we talk in prison, but it just didn't feel like real dialogue at all. And I hate to be shitty about a book. Like
no, but I felt it too.
But it was really hard. That alone was hard for me to get into. Like the story itself was
the story was fine.
Yeah, it's like if you like crime comics. There's one.
Yep, absolutely. It felt more like a book that was kind of built from the side of like, let's show that the prison system is unfair, and it's like, dude, we know. Yeah, like, yeah. I got it. I'm like, we're fucking unfair as shit. Like,
yeah. But at the same time, it's like, you know, maybe it's like one of those ones where like maybe he did it. Who knows? I don't know. It just could have.
That
like,
would be crazy. Yeah, that would be a crazy twist if he was actually guilty.
It's true.
I might actually get back on board if it turned out that he actually killed him.
I would like it to have some kind of a left turn kind of thing.
That would be weird.
Anyway, we'll see.
You know what does have a left turn?
Does?
Nope.
I was going to say, well,
sorry,
I missed it.
Just wanted to do some sort of segue.
Yeah.
Old Man Quill.
Yeah.
So, actually, I thought this did have a twist. And I'm going to spoil it because I don't think they tell you this going into it. I assumed that this was its own thing just existing outside the world of Old Man Logan and like that whole universe. And I'm going to spoil this book for you and say it is not. This is happening at the exact same time as the events of Old Man Logan and Old Man Hawkeye.
Yes.
So that whole world, he's trying to get a hold of the Avengers. He's trying to get a hold of the X-Men and all this stuff. And he's like, why aren't they responding? And all this crap is going on the planet that he took over. And spoiler alert, it's because everybody's dead and Wolverine murdered everybody.
Yeah.
And yeah, so
yeah, it's another old man book.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I'm excited to see where it goes. If you liked Old Man Hawkeye, you're probably gonna love this.
Yeah,
so
it's a different angle.
Yeah, it's just a different angle on the same world. Mm. Mystery Science Theater number 4.
I thought this was funny.
It's funny.
It's funny.
These have been really good.
Yeah.
It's more Black Cat stuff.
And horror. Tales
and a horror tale that they've
like
just
one of a
jammed the MST cast into.
Yep.
And had them do funny things, and it's funny.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yep.
It makes me really happy that there's an MST comic.
Yeah.
Cool. And if you love Mystery Science Theater, you're going to
love it. These segues are killing it, dude.
Actually, this one's a better segue. You're going to love the magazine I'm putting out next month. Next Funbox Monster has an 8-page interview with Jonah Ray talking about punk rock and straight edge and stuff.
Cool.
That's going to be great.
Nice.
So
that's awesome.
There's 6 or 7 really good interviews in that. Lloyd Kaufman, Jonah Ray, Harold Ohlmeyer from DRI.
What?
Talking about his book. There's a bunch of great stuff.
Neat.
So yes, next Funbox Monster magazine is going to rule.
Yes.
Anyway, but on to what this is. Tony Stark, and he's an Iron Man.
Yes, and on the cover, it's him in a bottle of booze. And knowing your history of Iron Man and booze, you know that this is not a good thing to be on the cover of an Iron Man
comic.
The
story is called Digital Demon in a Bottle.
It is.
Yes, it is.
It actually is?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Isn't it? I thought it was.
It's called Factory Settings.
Well, something says Digital Demon in a Bottle.
Digital Demon in a Bottle.
I think it was one of my solicits or something.
Digital Demon in a Bottle.
But either way,
yeah.
He gets drunk on digits and...
He does.
And it's real good.
He does. He does. At that.
Green Arrow. We got Count Vertigo.
Yeah, he fights Captain Vertigo, who apparently is looking for Arsenal, and then at the end he finds out he's dead, and then that's what happens.
And then it's actually pretty good.
I know, it was actually, I like the art.
A lot of these, when they do I know you have a problem with DC getting maudlin all the time.
Yeah.
But this
was okay.
This was different, because this was a human moment with a villain that felt a very ridiculous, over-colorful, crazy villain like Count Vertigo, having him humanized for a moment where he's acting all crazy and super villainy, and then he's like, oh shit, oh no, Arsenal's dead, oh my god, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
It was really nice. I liked it a lot.
I think that, so to start out, the art is good in this. I really like this artist, Javier Fernandez.
Yes.
And then there's clearly some history with Count Vertigo and Roy Harper, and then halfway through the issue, he's just like, tell me where he is. And he's like, he died. And then it's like, rough.
Shit, man. I'm so sorry. Are you okay?
It is actually really rough that happened.
And also, but it really was, it was weird because he literally did that. He had this turn where he was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Are you okay?
Yeah, it's like he's the battle just stops.
That must be really hard for you. I'm so sorry. It was like, oh God.
Yeah.
That's really good. That was a good take.
Yeah, it was cool. It was Green Arrow 49 by Kelly Lansing, Fernandez, and Kellys.
Right, and so we have J.M. DeMatteis doing a new book with my friend Corinne. She's doing... Her art is so fucking good.
Did you read this?
Yeah, I did.
I liked it.
Corinne Howell, she's wonderful. She's done so much stuff with Ghostbusters and Transformers. She does a bunch of IDW stuff.
Cool.
But luckily, she got in. She's a student of Sean Murphy's. She's... Her art just... I might give her more credit than a usual person, because I always look at her and think she's 16, but she is not 16. She looks very young. But she is so fucking talented. It's crazy. Yeah. Her new stuff has been you can watch her progressing, and she's going to be She's going to be up there very soon. I mean, she already is. This book is beautiful.
Yeah, and it's a really cool, like,
it is
interesting story that you don't, it's not like it's a unique original story, which I guess I would expect from that writer.
Yeah.
He's like the Moonstruck.
Yep.
Moon dance.
Yes.
And the moon, whatever. Justice. Something with moon.
He also did Hellraiser and
Moon Baby.
God damn it. Hellblazer.
Jesus.
I can't think of things today either.
Well, he also did Justice League International, the haha Justice League.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was like one of the guys. Right? No. No. Am I thinking? Was it him?
De Matteis? I don't know.
No.
I just remember him from all the Vertigo stuff.
Who's the guy with Keith Giffen that did that? Was that not him?
Oh, no, it's not. No. It's somebody else.
Okay, sorry. Anyway.
At least I think.
I don't.
Who knows?
I'm forgetting because he's done like 10 billion comics.
Yes.
But
either way.
This is from Burger Books, and it is a woman who in the late 60s is murdered. And then finds herself in the present day, but she also meets herself having aged in the present day. And then the mystery of, like, can someone be, like,
yes.
What's the ramifications of all that? And it was a very interesting thought. It's called, oh, we didn't even say the title of it.
Oh, my God.
It's called The Girl in the Bay. And Tristan knows how to pronounce the names. And he said them. And it's number one of four from Burger Books, Dark Horse
yes.
Comics. And
yes.
I liked it.
Yeah, Corinne, be on the lookout for her. She is absolutely, absolutely mind-blowing. Her art is just like, it's awesome. It's awesome, awesome, awesome. She draws Transformers in a way that I was like, I've always loved the way that she does it. And I've never thought that I would think that about somebody. But she manages to get like facial expressions and things on these weird blocky toys that are like, it's just beautiful. She does great stuff. And
nice.
She's really good. She's really good with settings as well. Just really like her stuff.
I'm gonna advocate for myself for a second though. De Matteis
yeah.
and Keith Giffen were the Justice League
really?
Team.
Yeah, okay.
For sure. I've thought about it now and I know I'm right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that was the writing team. They did it together.
Oh wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. For sure.
Because that was a fairly funny book, I think.
Yeah, it was.
I seem to remember enjoying that.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, but
that's good.
Speaking of
it.
Good people who are very funny.
Yeah.
Zdarsky doing Daredevil.
Man, there's a backup. Okay, so the first story in this I thought was great, and I won't like just like yammer on, but there's like a 3-page backup that's like, here's what happens, and then the next page is like the same thing, but like how Daredevil perceives it. And it's super cool. It's not like funny or anything. It's just like, here's like someone thinking about what the world is like for Daredevil versus what the world is like for a person who can see. And just, I'd never seen it done that way. And I thought it was really, really cool. And then the main story was also just generally cool. Daredevil, the Frank Miller-ish Daredevil.
I didn't read that backup, and it is awesome.
It's awesome. It's only three pages, but it's like super powerful. I thought it was really cool. And it's a good example of why Chip Zdarsky is awesome.
Yeah. And again, this is not a funny book. Like
he
doesn't make this one funny. This is a straightforward Daredevil book, and it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is amazing because he is a very funny dude.
Yeah.
That's kind of his shtick, and this is him doing straightforward Daredevil, and
yeah.
It is awesome.
Yeah, this is classic Daredevil, classic like religious themes for Daredevil kind of stuff, but you know, an overall story involving the Kingpin and crime.
Yep.
and also I think just
crime is
kind
bad.
Of like what he's thinking a lot about is like someone with religious conviction using violence in the to achieve good and how that's not good according to his faith.
Yeah, but Jesus drove the moneylenders out of the temple with a whip.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was also the son of God, dude. that was the priest's response.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked that.
No, it was good. Did you read Champions?
I did.
Champions.
I read Champions and I really liked it. So the first one, I'm probably not going to spoil anything for anybody. The first one, we're posed with a thing where Miles has done something that we don't know what it is, but he's in league with the devil now for some reason. There was like a Mephisto has something over him at this point, and we don't know why. and it is revealed what he had over him. What happened? You know, in this issue,
yep,
a thing happens that is bad, and Miles makes a deal.
Yeah. There was a point where they were talking about Viv Vision, the character Viv Vision, and when I saw her name Viv, I was trying to figure out what Roman numeral they were saying, and then I was like, oh, wait, it's not a Roman numeral.
I thought you were going to say that you were thinking that it was the young ones.
No, no, I was literally looking at VIV and thinking, like, what is that if it were a Roman numeral, and what I came up with was, I don't know.
It's 54.
Is it 54? No, not really.
It would be, I guess it would be 9.
No, 41.
That would be really confusing.
Wait, V is 5. No.
It's 5.
Yeah, no, it's just like it's a nonsense one. It doesn't make sense. Right. You can't do it. Okay. So I'm right.
This no speaking sense. Of nonsense things, speaking I didn't even nonsense. Bother reading this.
I did read this. It's Marvel Action Avengers from IDW number 2. In this, it's Avengers versus AIM, and Iron Man becomes an agent of AIM. And also Fin Fang Foom, isn't
it? Fin Fang Foom, Fin Fang Foom.
The MacGuffin of Avengers children's takes. It's like every children's take on Avengers. It involves them having to fight Fin Fang Foom.
Okay, and last, but no real reason that it's last.
Yeah, yeah, it just was bottom of the stack for some reason.
Avengers 14. So Avengers, we've got Marvel going back into the, returning to the well of vampires. We got Dracula in this issue. We got some other stuff. There's some interesting shit going on in this. It's got cheesy, like, knowing who wrote it, I know that he was really probably trying to write this like it was a sequel to the Blade movies.
Yeah, like a 70s exploitation.
It's got really, really dumb dialogue, but funny dumb dialogue. I dig it.
It's the kind of dialogue that's just like fun to read out loud in like silly voices.
It is very
which I definitely did in the store for probably longer than anyone wanted to hear.
But some of them are really good.
Yeah.
And it actually has a little tag at the end that I think could be very interesting if they do it right.
Yeah, so
I'm stoked.
This is the last storyline before this War of Realms, because they're letting us know the War of Realms starts in 2 months. But it is the Vampire War, and it is just crazy vampire versus superheroes, like, nonstop.
Yep, and Blade.
Yeah. Which, is Blade a superhero? No? You don't consider him?
Blade's a vampire.
He's a half vampire.
He's a daywalker.
Daywalker. Oh, that was that line. That was like the first one in there. He's like, hiss, you miserable daywalker. Your blood's not even worth drinking.
Sure it is. It is worth drinking.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that vampire was like needing some blood, I think he'd drink it.
I bet his blood is great.
What is he, like, craft blood?
Ugh. Stupid hipster vampires are the worst. All right, so that's what we got this week.
Yeah. Any other trades? Yeah,
there's a bunch of crazy stuff. Look at our website, coastcitycomics.com. All that stuff is up there and for sale. And, use code BLARG to get free shipping.
Yes.
BLARGH !! for free shipping. And thank you guys so much for listening.
Yes.
And we'll see you next week.
Yes.
Bye-bye.